First this hour to what could arguably be seen as the sidebar issue with our peer. Sucking so much energy out of our politics right now, the dual citizenship dramas, it's hard to remember an equivalent issue that's emerged quite so suddenly from the sidelines, in this case from a Perth barrister's questions about the Constitution, and which seems to defy easy solution, deflecting attention too from the nation's bigger challenges. A range of questions permeate the rising tensions, so we've invited two respected commentators to join us because we think they can straddle the politics, the history and the applied legalities with some authority. That's the ABC's election analyst Anthony Green and the Financial Review's Laura Tingle. And this is where we'd like to go today. Is someone stirring this up? That was a key implication by the Prime Minister yesterday. Is some sort of process solution on offer? Realistically, and how do other countries treat the issue of dual citizens standing in their parliaments, their law-making bodies? So, Laura and Anthony, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
We spoke last Saturday, Laura. A week is a long time in politics. Let's go to that first question as to whether these dramas are being fanned for reasons other than the Constitution. I mean, clearly that was behind the Prime Minister's angry statements yesterday at a press conference about Energy Minister Josh Frydenberg. Let's hear it.
Three quarters of all the Jews in Hungary were murdered in the Holocaust, and the prelude to murdering them was depriving them of their citizenship, rendering them subhumans in the eyes of the fascists and the Nazis. I wish that those who make these allegations about Josh Frydenberg could think a little deeper.
So is politics being played here, Laura?
Well, yes, Geraldine. I mean, if you think about how this issue has morphed, it has morphed from just being about constitutional questions. You've now got the whole sort of spectre of greed and avarice about who gets Stephen Parry's Senate presidency spot worth $355,000 a year. So you've got that whole horror of you know, people getting really angry about politicians. On the take, if you like, or, you know, being greedy. On the take's not the right word. So you've got all of that, plus you just get this sort of feeding frenzy, as the Prime Minister says, a sort of witch hunt where scores are being settled. And I think the Josh Frydenberg thing really just highlighted how revolting this has become. The issues are about his citizenship, There are scores being settled here in all these cases being raised. Now, does that mean that there shouldn't be a legitimate scrutiny of these things? Of course not, but it's become very, very messy and problematic.
But, I mean, who's doing the fanning? I think, I don't understand this anymore. I don't really get what is, the notion that there's a witch hunt on, or by whom? Like, I don't understand it.
Well, I think there's a witch hunt on in the sense that, even just in the sense of, okay, journalists have to do their job and scrutinise all of these things. And since the citizenship issue arose, journos have been out there looking for, further cases, further scalps, if you like. And
are they being helped? Are they being prompted by people?
I'm sure they're being helped and I'm sure they're being encouraged. People are, continuing to ring me and say, oh, why don't you look at so-and-so, and often their cases that have come up before. But the dilemma in this, Geraldine, I think is actually highlighted by what the PM said yesterday. He's making a very powerful argument that the only people or the only institution under the law in Australia that can determine somebody's right to sit or not sit in the parliament is the High Court. And he's utterly and completely right about that. But then he then goes on and says, in that incredibly emotional and very, very angry defence of Josh Frydenberg, look, Josh Frydenberg's mother was born in the ghetto in Budapest in 1943. The parents had been stripped of their citizenship because they were Jewish. And it's this horrendous, horrendous story. Mm. And it shouldn't be something. It shouldn't be something that's being debated. But yet, the Australians pointing out that there was some change to the Hungarian law where they tried to redress this at some later point, and that therefore, you know, there may be a question over Josh Frydenberg's citizenship. I don't know. Do you know?
Anthony, this is what is so interesting, is that there's a question of the statelessness, which I gather was also a factor for Nick Xenophon in being, in effect, freed by the High Court. But what people seem to have taken, I saw that detail earlier in this week, that the Hungarians, as an act of compassion, decided that they would retrospectively give citizenship status to people who were stateless. And we can see what's happening with the Rohingya with statelessness. So that was actually an act of compassion, which has had this long tail impact on Australian law, it would seem.
Well, it's on Australian law in the sense that because we take that literal interpretation in the Constitution, it's a very passive form in reference to foreign citizenship. And there's nothing in there like in some constitutions about knowingly takes or takes steps. There's nothing there which makes it an active sense to take foreign citizenship. It's completely passive, which means it's determined entirely by foreign law. In all the fuss that's gone on with Barnaby Joyce, there is only one thing that has changed, and that is his status under New Zealand citizenship law. And that's the only thing in everything that's changed. He's going to get back. Barnaby hasn't changed. What people think of him hasn't changed. Nothing has exchanged except his position under a foreign law. And Josh Frydenberg's another example of that. This obscure stuff has gone on with law over several decades, which has had no connection with no one saying he's got any connection with Hungary. And yet there are people running around. We've been overtaken with a car park mentality. You can't park there because you can't park there. Rules are rules and you have to follow the rules.
Yes. Andrew Farron was writing, who's a former diplomat and an academic in public and international law, was writing in that blog, Pearls and Irritations, that he understood the Constitution to say that Australian law would not be affected by the rule foreign law rulings. So he sees this as a complete conflict, using your own explanation there. Foreign law is affecting ours.
The Constitution, they did say it's not automatic that a foreign rule applies here. But that was the original judgment in Sykes versus Clear, and it held up here.
That was back in 1992 when Bob Hawkes stood down. Yep.
So if this went to the High Court might say this is silly. It's silly in the same way it sort of said that with the Canavan and Xenophon cases, that the citizenship was either in dispute, was so long-lasting you couldn't possibly treat it passively, which was the Canavan case, or in Xenophon's case, the only reason the citizens existed was to avoid certain people being declared stateless and clear, that, you know, and he had no right to vote but abode, no rights of entry, and no requirement for loyalty. The one thing that might come out of this with the audit, while it is true the High Court rules, the power over qualification was given to the Parliament in the original Constitution until the Parliament otherwise decides. And the Parliament has since included in the Electoral Act so that for these cases on qualification to get to the High Court, the Parliament, the House of Parliament, one or the other, House or Senate, has to refer them. Now, if they do the audit, there may be cases, and Josh Frydenberg's might be a good example, where the Parliament or the House of Representatives declines to refer them to the High Court. In other words, the High Court won't have to rule on it because the Parliament says we're not referring it. They did that with a case of office for profit involving Warren Entsch in the 1980s, and did it with Senator Jeannie Ferris, who'd fallen foul of qualification after being elected, and they allowed it to resign and be reappointed, and they didn't refer it to the High Court. So there is the possibility in this process. You know, there's two Labor members, there's a dispute about whether they did enough before they nominated.
It's Justine Key and Katie Gallagher.
Or is it more important that they applied before, or is it important that they got the document after?
To renounce their British citizenship.
That's right. So that hasn't been ruled upon. Do we want the High Court to be ruling on that? Does the High Court itself want to rule on that? There is the possibility the Parliament may now just not refer them. That opens the possibility that others may pursue what's called a common informant case, which is long and complex. There's a case with David Gillespie going on, launched by the Labor Party under this rule, where you can take it to the High Court if you wish to pursue it. But if the Parliament declined to send some of these, I'd be surprised if anybody bothered to pursue them.
All right. Well, so, Laura, my second question is then, is there a realistic solution in the offing? Labor's now proposed this, well, they're not calling it an audit, they're calling it a declaration, I think it is, that everybody has to sort of, in effect, prove that they've taken the right decisions. And now we've got this absurdity where the Prime Minister seems to be saying, no, we won't do anything like that. So can you see a solution? I think the public is positively desperate.
Look, I think the Prime Minister's position, which is very firmly based, Geraldine, in the argument, look, it ultimately always goes to the High Court. So the audit doesn't sort of solve problems. And, you know, there are all sorts of really deeply disturbing things once you get into it about people prodding into people's lives.
Yes.
But Labor has also been resisting the audit. Now, what Labor did yesterday was a little bit cute because they were sort of saying we'll have something sort of like an audit, but we won't call it an audit because we're against an audit. Compounding the PM's problems by sort of saying something's got to be done. But the point is something does have to be done. We've reached that stage where it has got, as the PM says, to be a witch hunt, to be completely frenzied. So you need some sort of circuit breaker. Now, my colleague Phil Khoury reported...
I'd say farce, actually, rather than witch hunt. But anyway, go on.
Well, yeah, but there is something very ugly about this now, Geraldine. Really, really ugly. I think Phil Khoury reported yesterday that one suggestion that was doing the rounds within the government was that a declaration be made, okay, from now on, anybody who has problems, a la Stephen Parry coming forward and saying, oh, you know, I accidentally forgot to mention this guy, as I was referring all the rest of you to the High Court, anybody else who comes forward after some sort of period of, you know, warning, I won't say an amnesty, will have to repay their salaries and repay the money that they've been paid by taxpayers. Now, I don't think this is finalised or in any formula that's yet ready to go, but basically a really, really crystal clear incentive to Polly's to sort of say, right, I need to clear this up once and for all.
And look, finally to you, and not for long, I'm afraid, Anthony, as somebody asked me to ask you, how do other countries treat the issue of dual citizens standing in their parliaments, not having the right to vote, but standing in their law-making bodies?
Some of them allow dual citizens to sit in Parliament. New Zealand does. They must be New Zealand citizens. Same in Britain. Again, you must be a New Zealand citizen. But you can be a dual citizen. Boris Johnson was until recently by birth an American citizen. He eventually got rid of it to avoid some tax purposes in America. But, I mean, the different countries do it differently. Some of them deal with it in their citizenship law. You can't be a dual citizen anyway. So, therefore, there's no problem with being dual and being in Parliament. But certainly, very few of them have an interpretation which is so strict as we have. But basically, remember, the Constitution was written 50 years before there even were Australian citizens. And someone like Stephen Parry, his father probably could have sat in the Australian Parliament as a British citizen. And yet, 70 years later, his son is tossed out of Parliament for being the son of a British citizen who had the right to sit in Parliament. So it's all a bit silly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, in fact, I do suggest to listeners they go and do a Wikipedia search on citizenship. It's totally fascinating. It really is how many times we've been fiddling with this. So, look, thank you both very much indeed for threading your way through that today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Geraldine.
Laura Tingle and Anthony Green, and I can see you certainly hit the text line. Oh, yes, what an amazing sort of thing to be breaking over our lives at the moment when there do seem to be so many other things that deserve very important concentration of our minds, as you're saying to me.